The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, Nerdapalooza, the world's largest nerd music festival, and with generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and to learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Epic Podcast. Introducing your hosts, Nelson Lugo and Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming to you from the beautiful and spacious Studio 6C in Astoria, Queens, this is the Epic Podcast, Episode 12. I'm your host, Nelson Lugo.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming to you from the beautiful and spacious Studio 6C in Astoria, Queens, this is the Epic Podcast, Episode 12. And I am your other host, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Oh, that was great.
Look, if you say I don't say enough in the intro, I'm going to say all of it.
You know what? I'm going to give you that one. I'm going to...
Really?
Yeah. Good. No, that's a fair... It's a ridiculous point, but it's a fair point. So I'm just happy you said your name. I don't care how you did it.
Well...
How you doing, man? We're back.
We're back. It's been a month.
I know. It's been a whole month.
It's been a really hot, sweaty month.
Yes. Oh, my God. Seriously.
We are in the grips of a heat wave.
It is awful.
Yeah.
Absolutely awful here.
This year, I spent the best money I've ever spent in a brand new air conditioner. In previous years, I have purchased used air conditioners from friends that they were getting rid of them, and it barely cooled my, you know, just my bedroom. My whole apartment is hot as fuck, but it just for cooling my bedroom. And they never really worked. They gave me really expensive electric bills. They were very loud.
Oh my!
And also, I feel like the heat waves in summers past haven't been quite so. Brutal.
Well, they were brutal, but not nearly as long.
Yeah, well, like, that's fair enough. Yeah, last year around the 4th of July, there was a nasty one for about 5 days.
Yeah, oh, I remember that one.
Yeah, well, this has been July. This has been like all month. And I've got a brand new air conditioner in my bedroom, and damn, it's like when you wake up in there, it's like, I'll be in a hotel. It's so
nice.
Cold. Yeah, it's
nice.
Lovely.
I'm actually quite lucky in that I live in a... finished basement, and so it's always several degrees cooler in my apartment than anywhere else.
Is that difficult?
What do you mean?
Because you don't speak Finnish.
Wow. Wow.
Look, it's not my proudest hour.
Is that racist? I don't know.
Nope. It's xenophobic.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, we're in the grips of a heat wave, but that you can get that on the news. Who cares about that? Let's talk about important stuff.
All right. I have been doing well. I have been doing my version of well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Does that mean that you are drinking less, going out more? As in socializing, rather than being stuck in your apartment all day long?
Okay, neither of those things.
Okay, all right.
Accurate.
Are you using less substances to get yourself through the day?
All right, maybe I should just tell you instead of having you guess. Actually, most of those things are pretty accurate.
Well, I do know you.
Yes, I
know
am,
you quite well.
I am a social hermit.
Yes.
Luckily, this year, I have had an excuse for being a social hermit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really, I feel I would be a social hermit regardless.
Yeah, you would.
I don't like going out unless I have to. I just want to be alone and so that I can spend some quality time with the goblins in my head.
To be fair, I am also the same way. I actually do not enjoy leaving my apartment unless there's a specific and urgent reason for me to leave my apartment.
Like work.
Yeah.
I go out when I have a gig.
Right. When I'm being paid, that's when I leave my apartment. Or at least that's when I don't mind leaving my apartment.
Right now, it would probably suit both of us to get out a little bit more because, again, you, all right, your basement with the fins.
Yeah.
It's nice and cool because it's basement. Right. I'm on the sixth floor of a building, and it sucks in here. Well, it's nice in my bedroom. Again, climate control.
Well, you also have fans that, I mean, that, you know, electric fans, that helps a little bit, right?
A little bit.
Well, you know. You got to take the good with the bad, my friend.
All right. When did you become such an optimist?
Oh, I've always been an optimist. There was just a large chunk of time where I was crazy sad.
Well, they must have taken out your pessimism tumors.
I kept all of my bleak outlook on life in my testicles.
Right.
And so...
Ooh, that's actually probably a fitting description for your life, regardless of cancer.
Touche, sir. Touche.
And you? How have you been doing? That was qualified.
Well, you know what? It's been a pretty crazy summer.
Would you say it's been one crazy summer?
No. No, I would not, for many, many reasons. Not the least of which is that I do not want to entertain the poorly realized joke that you want to tell.
I just want to make quotes from a John Cusack movie of the 80s. All right, go on.
Well, I mean, I got done with all my hospital stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I'm in the clear for all kinds of things. So yay that. And then I just kind of hit the ground running, just trying to get really busy doing stuff and trying to get Epic Win Burlesque back under the auspices of a Lugo running the show.
The Lugo regime.
Right, the Lugo regime. And, you know, doing other stuff, trying to get my magic career back on track and things like that. Did some traveling, went to Florida.
Florida?
Yeah. Hosted
the Sunshine State.
The Sunshine State. I was in Orlando for about a week, and I hosted the Big Bang Boom Cabaret, which is a lot of fun. I love those ladies down there. They're doing some really wonderful work.
It's Gams and Kisses show.
Gams Divine and Kissa Von Adams. Lovely, lovely people. Very, very pretty, very talented, and very savvy. Just very business savvy.
Yeah, they're great.
And and then, you know, which I suppose we'll get into later, but it was a very productive trip for me for my own career as well. So, which I guess we'll talk about later.
You want to save that for a little while?
Yeah, we'll save it for later. Okay. Yeah, I mean, otherwise we won't have anything to talk about.
Well, yeah, like I'd like to point out, we do not have a guest this month.
No, this is it's a couple of things. One, it's our 12th episode. So this is a landmark episode for us.
Wait. Okay. When is the number 12 a landmark in anything?
Well, it's, you know, we're coming up on our birthday.
Oh, all right.
You know what I mean? So,
but it's not our birthday.
Not officially. No.
No. So,
but 12 episodes is nothing to sneeze at. Do you realize that like 90% of all podcasts that get started like fail before they reach 10?
Oh, no. We've made 12 episodes, but we failed like two episodes in. If you're at home and you want to go back to our archives, I feel the pilot episode was very charming and clever, and it's just been like a roller coaster down ever since.
Oh, shut up. No, come on. We've done some really interesting...
No, we've had some great guests.
Oh, you... Now who's being self-deprecating?
Me.
Yeah, not me for a change.
All right. So we're not having a guest because it's a milestone. Also, I think it just kind of helps, or it's thematically appropriate for the kind of social hermitude. I don't really feel like entertaining a guest that isn't you right now.
I think, you know, when we talked about it and said, well, who can we get? And we know tons and tons of interesting people, but nobody really just came to mind until. We just came to the realization that both of us are working on some pretty important stuff in our own sort of personal careers as entertainers. That's right. You know, and there's a lot of people who are very interested to know the status of where you are and the status of where I am. And I just thought this would be a really good opportunity to sort of catch them up on what's going on.
So we don't need somebody else in here with their silly ideas and projects and voices.
Fuck other entertainers.
Gosh, that makes it so much easier to edit this.
So much easier.
What else is new? I know what else is new.
What's that?
Well, we just got back from Comic-Con.
Oh, that's right. Comic-Con.
Comic-Con.
California.
San Diego. We swam with the sharks.
We did. And if by sharks you mean a sea of nerds, then...
Yeah. The annual Comic-Con in San Diego.
Very
difficult to get into. I mean, it sells out almost within hours of the
tickets. Well, we bought our tickets like the day they became available online. Yeah.
And we went out there because we wanted to go see everything and stand in all the lines. And we saw so much awesome stuff.
I saw so many people from New York in San Diego, which is weird.
Yeah.
A lot of New York nerds just make it out there.
They do. Pat and Tony.
Pat and Tony.
They're always there.
Yeah. Lucas Siegel from Newsarama was there.
Lucas Siegel from Newsarama, two-time podcast alum. He was there working for Newsarama.com.
Insane. This was an insane year for Comic-Con.
Oh, gosh. You know who we got to see at Comic-Con?
We saw a lot of people. Who are you talking about?
We saw Loki of Asgard.
Damn right.
When he appeared at the Marvel...
Hall H, motherfuckers!
Right, the Marvel panel at Hall H. When he addressed the crowd and asked them to kneel, there was Tom Hiddleston in full regalia.
And then the teaser for Superman 2.
Oh, my goodness. They're going to do a Superman versus Batman movie, a world's finest movie.
I know.
I was like, the room was electric when they showed that... When that actor from Man of Steel came out and spoke, and then they showed the graphic.
Yes.
Oh, God.
And then the lights came back on and they were gone.
It was just amazing. Brian Cranston was walking around on the convention floor, but he was cosplaying as Walter White. He had one of those realistic masks. And then when he revealed it at the panel where he spoke, boy, that was a big reveal. None of us saw that coming. Let's say it happened at the Guardians of the Galaxy panel, because I think he's in that.
Sure.
So, yeah. Oh, gosh. Just an amazing Comic-Con. You know what would have probably... The only thing that would have made this year's Comic-Con even better for us?
If we actually attended Comic-Con this year?
Yeah, that would have been great.
That would have been so awesome if we did that. That was...
It's a rough week.
I wanted to go this year so bad.
It's a rough week every year.
Yeah.
And it's just, everybody's just posting endlessly.
Why don't we go?
Endlessly.
Seriously, like, why don't we actually go? Why is that? Well, first of all, you're not actually a con person. You don't even go to New York Comic Con.
I don't know why that is either. Oh, no. Yes, I do. Because it's full of people. And crowds. I don't like crowds of people. Look, I like crowds of people. I don't go to parades.
Right.
I don't like big parties.
Right.
I don't like big shows, even if it's a band I really like. I don't like going to stadium shows, and I don't like going to conventions. I only like big crowds of people in one situation.
Where
I have to be standing at least 6 feet higher than everybody else, and they all have to be facing my direction. Then I love crowds. Oh, they're just like heroin. Oh, they're so intoxicating. Their love and their enthusiasm and their screams. Wonderful. Candy. Other than that, if I have to...
I feel the same way, but I'm not as strict about it as you are. Like, I go to New York Comic Con.
Right.
And the crowds unnerve me. But I tolerate it because it's New York Comic Con. You know what I mean? But other than that... I don't voluntarily put myself in massive crowds.
Sure.
I just don't. I don't go to parades for the same reason. I don't go to concert shows for the same reason.
You know, ever since I've lived in New York, people always ask me, hey, have you ever been to the Macy's Day Parade on Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
And I always say, you know they show that on television, right?
Yeah, I've gone to every major parade once. And then never again.
No, God, no.
Just so I can say I did it.
You ever gone to Times Square on New Year's Eve?
Once.
Really?
Once. And never again.
Oh, my. I feel like I'm going to have a seizure just thinking about being
there. Yeah, I just can't do it. Like, I'm too much of a, I guess, a prima donna. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be able to sit down and I want to be able to, like, go to the bathroom without having it be an ordeal. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
And I don't like being pushed and jostled and have to respect other people's space.
I would love to go to Comic-Con, but I don't really want to fly across the country to stand in line for 18 hours.
Well, it's a bit more than that, but...
What do you mean?
Well, you don't stand in line for 18 hours. That's why
you stand in line constantly. You spend all of your time standing in line to get into panels.
Yeah.
To get to signings,
To
even get like see booths, it's like a
sure.
I don't do well with. Maybe that's it. Maybe
you just don't like waiting.
I hate waiting in line. Oh,
I guess, you know, I don't mind waiting if it's something that, like, is very important to me, you know. And I guess that's why I'll do it for New York Comic Con, but I won't do it anywhere else, basically. But, yeah, Sandy, it's like, I really, again, it's like, doing those New York things for me. Like, I want to go to San Diego Comic Con at least once.
Yeah.
So I can say I did it.
Yeah, I do too. Let's go next year.
Yeah, let's totally do it. Let's go next year.
Well, then now, if we decide to do it next year, we're not even going to be able to do it because...
Why not?
Oh, because there's like now it's because it sells out so fast. There's like a lottery to get tickets.
Oh, no, there isn't.
I was talking to LaMaya last night, and she was talking about how Tony and Pat barely got...
We have ins. We have industry ins.
How do we have ins?
Lucas Siegel, for one.
I don't think he can get us tickets to Comic-Con.
Well, if anyone...
He can bring us back some sweet swag.
That's true.
He better.
If he wants to be on this podcast again.
I don't think
again.
He can get us tickets to Comic-Con, though.
I think if anyone knew a way to get tickets, it would be him.
Yeah. Look. I think you're overestimating how strong of connections we have.
Well, the thing is, you won't even attempt to utilize them as a resource. I say, let's try. The worst that can happen is that you can't do it, and we're no worse off if we never say anything at all.
Fine.
All right, next year, our plan.
All right,
San Diego Comic Con.
All right.
Done. Awesome. do you want to talk about comic books? Because I want to talk about comic books a little bit.
Sure. So what have you been reading?
All right, I don't want to talk about stuff we've already talked about because I think we've talked about them to death.
Oh my God, have you heard about Lock and Key?
Shut up.
It's so good. It's the story of this family that experiences
tragedy. All right, I'm going to stop you there. I have been reading, I don't know if this is actually in print because I don't go to comic book shops anymore because I get everything digitally. But there's a title called Batman 66.
Right. It is a comic book series that is written. It's about Batman, but it's the Batman universe
it's the Adam
from
West
the
Batman.
Television show.
Yes, it's the Adam West Batman.
The first issue came out last week.
The first issue?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm reading like issue 3 right now.
Oh, then I was wrong.
They're weekly. It's a weekly title.
Wow.
And it's been optimized for digital reading.
Oh, okay.
Which means it's animated in a really wonderfully kooky kind of way.
Oh, like a motion comic. One of those.
A little bit. I mean, not as sophisticated as a motion comic, but it does. It'll every time you touch the screen to turn the page, normally what happens is it'll just go to another panel. But what this does is it'll actually populate like thought balloons or onomatopoeias or new art on the page you're already looking at, and it's fracking wonderful.
Really?
Yeah. I'm really enjoying it. But then again, I'm a sucker for the Adam West TV show.
Right. I still like, I don't even have a lot of nostalgia attached to the Adam West television show.
I have Batman. Extraordinary nostalgia for that TV show.
I'll watch it every now and then when it's, you know, on the hub at like 2 a.m. But that's only because I'm too high to turn the channel. And because I'm hoping it's like a Riddler episode. Because
well, I mean, I think this is actually a really wonderful gateway comic book for, you know, people who don't read comic books because everybody fucking knows the Adam West TV show. Everybody. Even if you don't read comic books, you've seen the Adam West TV show at some point in your childhood. And this harkens back. It has all the same characters. It has the same, you know, Chief O'Hara and the same guy who played the commissioner.
And they're illustrated like the cast.
Yeah, exactly. And the dialogue is exactly the same. It's that sort of over-the-top old chum kind of stuff. It's actually quite wonderful. I'm having a lot of fun.
Is Robin an idiot?
Yeah, he's yeah.
Because Robin was an idiot on the television show.
Yeah, he's still kind of an idiot in this one as well. And it's just, I just like, and Julie Newmar, like the Julie Newmar Catwoman is in it.
Oh, nice.
And the Frank Gorshin Riddler is in it.
Good.
And
Frank Gorshin Riddler, Emmy nominated performance.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
For Batman.
Yeah.
For playing the Riddler on that show. He was nominated for an Emmy.
He didn't win, but
no, but
he was nominated.
Look, that's still...
I'm giving him the kudos. I'm agreeing with you.
Do you think they're going to switch among Catwomen? Look, I want to see them switch among Catwomen.
The Eartha Kitt?
I don't want to see the other Riddler, because...
No.
The guy from Adam's Family.
Oh, right. The guy played Gomez Adams.
He was Riddler for a while, and that was a travesty.
It was a travesty.
But I would love to see some Eartha Kitt.
I don't know. Right now it's Julie Newmar, but it's so good.
It doesn't really matter. I'm never going to read it.
It's a shame. You know what? I probably, if it's actually in print, it's probably not nearly as fun. But because it's animated in a kooky kind of way on the digital thing.
You're having an interactive experience when
yes,
you read it.
Yes.
All right.
What else? The new Batman Superman. The first issue came out this month.
Right. I still haven't picked that up. You told me that you got it and it was
I liked
good.
It.
Huh.
I liked it a lot. It's still only the first issue, so it's still too early to tell.
Right.
But I like the dynamic that they're creating. It's still this antagonistic, like, you know, Batman doesn't like Superman and Clark Kent doesn't like Bruce Wayne kind of thing.
Do you think that this, there's so many Batman books in the DC universe now.
So many.
And for the most part, it's weird because they all kind of take place in the same universe. All the various Batman books reference the death of Damian Wayne and acknowledge it in some way.
Yeah.
Does this Batman Superman book take place in that universe? Or did they mention the death of Damian in the first issue, I guess is what I'm getting at.
No. The story is a prequel. It's like almost like a year one. It's when they first meet.
Right.
But there is a time travel element to it.
Wait, I'm going to stop you right there.
Yeah. It's not.
I was going to read this thing and now I'm not.
Why?
Because time travel is my very least favorite, storytelling device.
From what I've gathered, and I hope that wasn't a big ass spoiler, but, we get to see a very young Bruce Wayne and a very young Clark Kent,
which is what we're already seeing in the New 52.
Yes, and we get to see them meet for the first time, and how each of them figures out who the other one is, it's written in such a way that it's almost past tense, you know. So it's like it's already happened. So it's almost from a point of view of someone in the future.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
Huh.
So
I might read it. You know, I've never been a big Superman fan, but I did used to read years and years and years and years ago. I did love the World's Finest books because Batman.
Yeah.
I don't like Clark on his own, but I like him and his relationship with Bruce in the various ways that's been told.
Well, I was a big fan of the Batman Superman titles before the New 52.
I know because I have your comic book collection here,
yes,
which I alphabetized and, ordered chronologically. So I know that you love Batman and Superman.
Yes. And so I kind of missed it. And they're bringing it back. And so I'm excited about the idea. So far, so good. I mean, I'll pick up issue two. Again, it's a little too early to tell, but I like the first issue a lot. You know?
All right. I'll check it out. It looked beautiful. I flipped through it. I don't know who the artist is, but it looked like the same artist who did the Ozymandias books from the Watchmen. Before Watchmen series. It looked beautiful.
And what else? Lastly, but not leastly, and you're probably going to groan about this.
Oh, great.
Superman Unchained.
Is that the Snyder?
Yes.
That's Scott Snyder's Superman book.
It's the new Superman book. It's up to issue two. I like Superman. I don't read Superman very often, and I haven't read Superman for a long time, but I don't have a problem with Superman as most people do. Most people like out and out just hate Superman,
and they say all the same stuff. He's too goody goody.
Yeah,
he's
I just don't. Scout. I like. I never understood the arguments, but I don't read Superman not because I don't like the character, only because I just think it's really hard to write for Superman, and the stories end up feeling really flat most of the time.
Sure.
But this new Superman Unchained, quite good.
Well, let me ask you, since there are again a number of Superman books in the DC universe right now. In the rest of the books, is he chained to something?
Not that I'm aware of.
It'd be a pretty boring book. They're up to like 20 some issues of some of these series. If it was like 20 issues of just Superman chained to a wall going, boy, wish I could break free of these chains. I would totally go out there and do some good.
Wow.
How is this unchained? Why is it unchained? What does that
mean? I don't know. I think it's just another kind of like, because I don't think just having the title Superman doesn't sell books anymore. In much the same way, like, you can't have just a Spider-Man book. It has to be, like, The Amazing Spider-Man or, you know,
It was always The Amazing Spider-Man.
No, I know, but you can't have, like, Marvel just doesn't like, you know, it can't just be Thor. It has to be, like, The Mighty Thor. It's just another title. It's Superman Unchained.
It's like Batman Forever.
Oh, God. Shut up. So I'm reading some pretty cool stuff. I'm reading this really awesome title called Kara's Magic. I guess it's a play on charismatic. Your belabored sighs are like food for my trolling soul.
It just sounds like something that a hack rapper would use as like a title of a song.
Ooh.
And then yeah, like, I think you'd be like, oh my God, look at your magnificent wordplay. Charismagic. Whoa.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the title, but the book is actually quite good. And I'm just now reading them. It's about this stage magician who actually has an actual magic power, and it's a significant thing that in this world where real magic exists, basically.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So that's right up your alley.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I am a fan of magic because I'm a magician.
I haven't really been reading too much new stuff. The fifth trade of Lock and Key came out. It's great. I've talked about Lock and Key for two episodes. If you still listen to this podcast and you haven't started reading it yet, come on. It's the best book being written right now.
It's so good. Do you want to talk about the thing that you purchased on the internet?
Oh yeah, I found this company that makes these replicas of props from various fantasy properties, and they actually make these die-cast replicas of the various keys in Lock and Key.
I'm so jealous.
Lock and Key is a world in which this family moves into this house that's kind of, it's got magic surrounding it, and there are all these keys scattered about throughout the house, and they all have various powers, and all the keys are really amazing looking. So there's this company that makes a number of the keys, and
You got a head key.
I did. I purchased a head key.
And I...
Not for me. I purchased it for BB Hart.
Yes.
Who's also a big fan of Lock and Key.
I'm very jealous. I want to own those keys, but I have no logical, practical reason for owning them.
I
know.
I want them all now. I want all of them.
And I just want them.
They don't make the gender key. That was...
Well, yet.
Well.
Yet.
Yet. So I've been reading that, and it's still excellent. A lot of great stuff has been, well, I don't know about great, but exciting stuff has been happening in Walking Dead.
I'm not reading that, so catch me up a little bit.
Well, there's been this ongoing story where there's these two factions in conflict, and one of them is Rick's group, who is like teamed up with a group called the Hilltop, and another group led by a man named Ezekiel, who is this mystic with a pet tiger.
Oh, dear.
And so, yeah, at some point you're like, all right, Walking Dead, you are totally running out of ideas. And they're going up against a group called the Saviors, led by a man named Negan. And he is one of the best villains ever written.
Really?
Yeah. Now, when this whole conflict first started, it felt very much like they were just retreading old territory. Very much felt like the governor story from years ago in the prison. And the governor leads Woodbury, and there's this conflict, and blah, 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 blah. And the governor was a sadist way more in the comics than he was on the TV show. But
sure,
the TV show governor was pretty terrible, too.
It's a TV show.
Negan in the books is horrifying.
Oh, my.
And so they've been, like, building this up for a while. And it has felt a little boring because – or not a little boring, but it's felt a little – tired and frustrating because it feels very much like the pacing has felt a lot like the Woodbury governor conflict.
And it seems
like they're just kind of doing the same thing over and over. There were some announcements that came out. I'm going to assume they were made at Comic-Con or ahead of Comic-Con. I don't know because
we didn't
I was too busy hanging out with my air conditioner, jealous. And apparently they're amping up for a full-on war between these two factions. It's going to take place over 12 issues. But these 12 issues are going to be published in something like 9 months. So they're going to be doing like every 3 weeks instead of monthly, which is great because they did that in like 97 through 100 as they were leading up to issue 100. So getting a new Walking Dead every 3 weeks versus monthly was great. So I'm excited about that because some big shit just went down in the book. Really, it's surely going to kick off this whole war. And I'm actually excited to see how this plays out. And I just hope I'm not like just reading the same thing I've already read before.
Right.
So, but it's still, I am very excited about The Walking Dead right now.
One of these days I'm going to have to jump back on the horse and just get those trades. Cause I think I got up to like seven or eight.
You made it to seven or eight of the trades?
Yeah.
Yeah. There are 18 now.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't read for a while.
Okay.
But yeah, maybe one of these days, maybe I'll do it digitally that way, you know. Yeah. I don't have to take any more shelf space up in my finite room of my apartment.
Another thing that I've been excited about in comics is our pal, Lucas Siegel, posted a link today
Oh, right.
An interview with Grant Morrison,
Batman Inc.,
talking about the final issue of Batman Inc., which is coming. Batman Inc. number 13 will be the final issue of that series, and which once upon a time was about how the Batman brand has spread to other countries around the world.
Right.
And in fact, that was what the story was in the original 52, or I'm sorry, in the original continuity, pre-52. But ever since the new 52 started, it was just about Damian.
Yeah.
That's the book where Damian died. He died in number 9 or number 8. And so it's really been this whole like kind of global, this conspiracy that Talia has been launching to get back at Bruce. The last issue, Bruce confronted the Damian's killer, and it was really brutal.
It was crazy.
And Grant Morrison said in this article that, again, Lucas posted that number 13 is coming. It's going to be incredibly bleak, and it's probably going to piss people off. And upon reading those words, I got twice as excited as I already had been.
I
don't like it when they cater to me. I don't like it when movies cater to me and give me what they think that I want, or when books go the easy route. Like, I would have been more satisfied at the end of The Dark Knight Rises if Bruce had actually died instead of faking his death so he could go live happily ever after in Spain with Catwoman.
Yeah.
I like it when stuff ends bad. That's why The Empire Strikes Back is the best movie of all time, because the bad guys win. So, and it's just hopelessness. Everybody, they failed. Everybody is screwed. So I'm really looking forward to the end of Batman Inc.
Well, I have enjoyed everything that Grant Morrison's ever done. So,
You've read. I mean, there's no way you could possibly have consumed everything.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, but I've consumed quite a bit of Grant Morrison stuff over the years, and he has never let me down. So, you know, I'm going to trust that he knows what he's doing, and I don't necessarily need a happy ending either, considering that, you know, for the next, you know, in the Batman book, he's just going to, he's basically on an angry tirade for the next half year at least.
Oh, no. In the Batman book, they've gone back in time. They're retelling his origin.
No, I'm talking about Batman and Robin. The title Batman and Robin, which is now Batman and Red Wing and Batman and Red Hood and Batman and Catwoman.
Oh, that book's great.
I know.
That's still, by the way, Batman and Robin or Batman and whoever his sidekick this month is still the best Batman book.
It is. Hands down.
In fact, I'm just going to go ahead and send a shout out to Rachel Gluckstern over at DC Comics. You're doing great work editing those Batman books, especially Batman and Robin.
Rachel, what?
No way she listens to this, but
no, there's no way. But you know, maybe it'll get back to her. Maybe someone listens to it that does know her.
Oh, and maybe she'll
grace us with her presence one day. Maybe one can dream. Yeah. One can dream. But yeah, I mean, other than that, I watched a bunch of movies, went to Florida. Now I'm here talking with you.
I've been trying to play video games. I haven't had time because I've been very busy. But I've been like, I'm still chipping away at The Last of Us.
Uh-huh.
I did play through that new chapter for The Walking Dead Telltale's game.
Oh, yeah. I played that,
400
too.
Days.
I played that, too. Yeah. So good.
I don't know about that.
I liked it.
It had so much potential. If it had been if it had just been like kind of one story,
yeah,
it would have been fine. But it felt like five stories that all ended before I knew who I was even dealing with. And I get it. They're setting up for chapter two or for season two of that game.
You know, I didn't mind it. I actually liked the smaller bite size chunks of
I felt the thing that worked so well in the main game was that they really had time to develop the characters, and you really developed relationships with these characters. I couldn't even tell you the name of a single character in 400 days, and I played it in one sitting. Couldn't tell you a single one of them. Vince might have been the prisoner.
You know what? I enjoyed it. I mean, I also can't tell you their names, but
I mean, I enjoyed it.
I don't mind it. I actually had a good time playing it, and it was very suspenseful and very. Choices were mad, fucking difficult.
Oh yeah, choices were very difficult. I'll give you that.
You know, and there was some really like very tense moments where split timing reaction was required. And
let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
The convenience store, the gas station, or hotel, whatever, wherever. I don't even remember what the locations were. There was a place where there was a bunch of survivors, and they caught somebody stealing their stuff.
Yes.
And you have to make a decision to kill that person or let them go?
Yes.
What did you do?
I killed.
Dude.
And then we booked it.
I let him go.
I'm going to play it again, and I'm going to make all the opposite choices this time.
Dude, not killing in cold blood. That's the last part of our humanity.
I was more afraid of what they would do to me as a result.
Oh, I love that too. Like the character that you play is the last one to pick, and everybody, it's like a split vote.
Yeah.
That was.
And everybody kind of blamed that character for the horrible shit that happened after like shit got stolen, or like when they let that one guy go, basically.
You know that there was a reference to the original game.
Oh yeah.
In that scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I saw Despicable Me 2.
You saw Despicable Me 2?
Yeah.
How was it?
Adorable. I love Despicable Me. I love that movie so much. And I was really excited for a sequel, and it delivered. It was really wonderful. I liked it a lot. It was very touching and very, a very sweet story, and funny, just funny as hell.
Yeah?
Yeah. Liked it a lot, actually.
Nice.
Very, very pleased with that movie. Go out and watch it.
I just haven't been to the movies in forever.
Yeah.
Because, again, I've been so busy. Oh, here's one thing I've been doing. I'm going to talk about a thing I can't talk about.
What?
I have been watching a television series on Netflix.
Oh, which one?
Well, that's the thing. It's a television series that's beloved by many people.
Oh, dear. Why can't you talk about it then?
Very beloved.
I know exactly what you're talking about
and
now.
And somehow, I managed to make it through when this television series originally aired without hearing anything about it. Like, I vaguely recognized some of the cast members, but
sure.
I didn't really hear anything about it all the way through the end. Considering I got a bunch of nerds in my news feeds, I somehow managed to make it through unscathed. So some time has passed, and now I'm watching it for the first time, finally. And it's awesome. And every time something awesome happens, I want to quote it online or talk about it online or compare it to something. But I can't because I'm terrified of my fans spoiling this show for me. So I can't talk about it until I finish it. And I can be like, hey, guess what, fuckers? I just watched for the first time. And I made it through to the end without learning anything.
Wait. Are you watching...
What are you gonna spell it like?
No. All right. Are you watching the content that's exclusive to Netflix, or are you going back and watching the entire thing?
You are thinking of the wrong thing.
This particular
show does not have content exclusive to Netflix.
Oh, so okay, so you're watching something on Netflix?
Yes.
That
everybody's seen.
Everybody's seen.
Well, not everybody, but a lot of people. Have seen.
Okay. So it's part of the pop culture lexicon.
Sure.
And you're just now getting around to it.
Yeah.
Well, tell me what it is and beep it out.
It's awesome.
Tell me what it is and beep it out.
I'm near the end of the second season.
Tell me what it is and beep it out.
I'll tell you when we're done recording.
It's funny if you beep it.
I feel like I just did that joke. I just did that joke. I am watching.
Oh, are you now?
Yeah. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Shut your fucking mouth.
I know. I'm not going to say anything. I only watched the first season of that. And I didn't care for it.
Really?
Did not care for it.
When I got to the end of the first season, I was kind of like still, oh no, this has potential. When you get into second season, you're like, oh, that's what this show is?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I should start the second season?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Well, I'm gonna tell you this. I watched the first season and I was like, oh, this is interesting, but I don't get what all the hype is about.
Yeah, it's really good.
All right.
I'm taking all of this out.
Okay.
Because they're going to try and guess.
Yeah, but we've said nothing.
Yeah, I know they're still going to try and guess.
Well, let them guess. Who
I
cares?
Know how you people are.
Awesome. Now that we are approaching our one-year anniversary, though, is there anything you'd like to... Anything we've learned? Anything we've learned in this year? Anything special about that you want to drop on our looming one-year anniversary?
Did you know
that
the Epic Podcast theme song has lyrics?
Are you really? Seriously? is it like you're watching the Epic Podcast? Oh, no. You're listening to the Epic Podcast. The podcast. I'm going to rhyme something with cast.
Nope.
Mast.
Not at all like that.
Fast.
You should really know.
Trast.
Okay.
Flabbergast.
No, it's not. That's a good rhyme, though.
Thank you.
But no. Look, so there's a fella named Dave Famous.
Who created our opening theme song.
Yes, he created the theme music for the opening of the podcast.
Right.
He also, over the years, he has created a lot of loops that I have turned into arrangements for songs of mine. So he has created the music behind Cat People, Night of the Living Christ.
Oh, wow.
Arrival of the Fittest.
Whoa.
Fuck This Song.
Oh.
Supervillain. Nerd nice. Lust.
Nice.
A lot
of the Schaefer the Dark Lord
yes.
songography.
Dave Famous has made a lot of beats over the years. Also, he's my former brother-in-law.
Oh.
Because he is Dr. Eviler's brother.
Look at that.
Yep.
Small world.
For more information on Dr. Eviler, please see episode 7. So he gave me this beat when he was giving me beats like years ago. He'd give me the beat that became the Epic Podcast theme, and I was going to write a song to it, and I just never could. Like I came up with a hook and a chorus. I came up with a chorus that I really really liked and a concept for it, but I couldn't ever write the verses, and I just had a hard time. And I tried a bunch, and I ended up just abandoning the project and forgot about it. And we were putting together our first episode, yeah. We needed some music for the beginning, and I was like, oh,
well, I remember,
I'll use that, but I'll just make it start at the chorus because that's my favorite part.
I remember the very specific conversation we had about it. I came to you and I said, do we have 15 seconds of music in your junk folder that we can use? And that was the first and last thing you pulled out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it. I was like, I've always wanted to use this for something because I like it.
Yeah.
I couldn't ever make it work.
Right. Are we going to hear the lyrics to this eventually?
I could play for you now.
Yeah?
You want to hear the Epic Podcast theme?
Yeah, you know what?
The original chorus?
Yes, let's take a break and you could play us out and then we'll come back and we'll talk in depth about what's up in our lives.
All right. So here is the abandoned song that was going to be made. And again, only a chorus.
Only
the
a chorus.
Abandoned chorus that was once going to be made from the Epic Podcast theme, created by Dave Famous.
And the title of that song was going to be
"I Am Going to Kill You."
Of course,
yeah.
I had
a hook. I had no verses. I didn't, look, I didn't really want to write a 3-minute song about how I'm going to kill you.
Well, you did at one point, but you couldn't make it work.
Yeah.
Well, does that mean that concept is abandoned forever, or can we hope to have an I Kill You song from Schaefer the Dark Lord in the near future?
Actually, my very first record, Meet My Maker, which came out in 2004.
Yeah.
When I was working on that, I was trying, when I was coming up with titles for it.
Yeah.
I had a short list, and the top of that list was I'm Going to Kill You. And Dr. Eviler, we were not married at that time. We were just dating. But,
sure.
She talked me out of it.
Good on her.
Yeah.
Good on her. That's
so,
a smart move on her part.
When the second record came around in 2007, I had a short list of titles, and the top of that list was I'm Going to Kill You. But then I came up with Mark of the Beast, and I was like, I'm so clever. And then I just
That also good change as well.
Thanks. Yeah. Then I just kind of abandoned the whole I'm going to kill you idea. And then years after that, it was probably like 2009, 2010.
Sure.
It might have even been like 2011 when finally got that beat from Dave, and I was like, all right, I'm finally doing this. I'm going to kill you. If I'm not going to make it an album title, I'm going to make a song.
Sure.
And I couldn't even make the song. I couldn't even finish making the song. So that's as close as I ever got to it. I feel it's probably abandoned at this point.
Okay. So it's a dead idea that will probably just never see the light of day at this point. All right.
But all right. I would like to think that now when new episodes of the podcast come out.
Sure.
And when they're being played.
Yeah.
That if anything, C. Muldrow is now hearing those lyrics as the opening theme plays.
C. Muldrow, the number one podcast superfan.
C. Muldrow, she receiver of the most shout outs in the history of this podcast.
That's true.
I keep calling it Piecast instead of podcast, and I just now said Piedcast.
I forgive you.
All right, thanks.
I forgive you. All right. So look, let's. You are working on some pretty important. Well, rather a pretty important project.
Yes.
In your life.
Yes.
Which is your next album.
Yes. And I have been for the past year.
Yeah. Or yeah. More. Very diligently.
Yes.
I too am working on something.
Yes.
So let's give the fans something. Let's talk about your album. I know I want to talk about your album.
Well, let's talk about mine first because I feel like there's less to talk about mine than there's to talk about yours.
Okay. All right. So I guess let's get this out of the way. How complete are you? How far away from this album being in our hands are you?
Really close. I think that I will have... I was kind of gunning for an August release,
uh-huh.
which is still possible, but I feel it's more likely in early September. I it'll be at the plant in August.
Oh, okay.
At this point...
Oh, wow. So it'll be like printed in August.
It'll be out of my hands in August.
Wow. So
and then I will play video games and watch television again.
Right.
And do things that don't involve me just sitting at my computer with
headphones So the writing is done.
The songs, there are 13 songs on the album.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
They are all written, recorded, edited, and bounced down to individual instrument stems. They are all, 13 of those songs are in the can. They are just now ready to be sent to the person who's going to mix it.
And you don't have a mixer yet?
I've got a couple people lined up.
Okay.
But I don't know who's going to actually get the gig.
Okay.
But and it's going to be going, whoever it is that's mixing it, it's going to that person this week.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then who's doing the mastering?
It'll be mastered again by my friend James Cruz at Zeitgeist Sound Studios in Long Island City, New York.
And he did your last album.
Yes, he mastered the last album too.
He's a
professional masterer. and he has a couple of Latin Grammys.
That's right. I remember you telling me. He mastered a couple of Latin albums.
Yeah, that won Album of the Year.
Wowzers.
Yeah. So
okay. Awesome.
So he's going to slum it to work on my project.
Okay. And so you have album art?
I have album art, yes.
Okay.
This album won't have colorful cartoony illustrations that the previous albums had.
Sure.
Also, if anybody's curious, this album cover won't be the third piece of a puzzle because, you know, Mark of the Beast and Manslaughter, they fit together and make a picture.
Oh, man.
The top half of my face and the bottom half.
Will you ever complete that picture or is that done?
No, it's done. It was just going to be those two.
Okay.
So this actually has photography for the front and back album covers. Those have been shot. I had that photo shoot last week. I got the pictures back this week. It looks terrific.
Yeah. I saw them and I concur. They look really wonderful.
Ben Trivett, he's a wonderful photographer. He's done a lot of work for Epic Wind Burlesque.
Yes, he
does. As well as both for both of us.
Yeah, yeah.
He shot the pictures that are used on our graphic on the Nerdy Show website.
That's right. The beat-up photos. Yeah.
The bloody noses and the black eyes and stuff. Yeah, Ben Trivett.
Wonderful.
So the album is a concept album.
Yeah.
There is a narrative arc that goes throughout the entire album.
Right.
All the songs tell a story, and there's a number of skits that add to that story.
Okay.
So as all the songs are done and they're going off for mixing, I've got some scripts for all of these skits that I'm going to bring in a friend of ours to help me punch them up a little bit,
sure.
Make them a little tighter, make them a little
funnier. A script doctor.
Funnier,
yeah.
Script doctor. And then I'll be bringing in the voice actor who will be doing all of these scenes with me. All of these skits, it's just dialogue between two characters. One of them is clearly myself, and one of them is somebody else.
And you're being vague on purpose. Like
yes.
You're because you have dreamed up a kind of, in my humble opinion, a pretty wonderful viral marketing campaign for this thing.
Oh, thank you.
Keeping everybody in the dark, keeping it a mystery until the very last possible moment.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about it, and I know what's going on. Like, I've heard half the songs on the album.
I know, and you still, I feel I've kept the...
You've kept some pretty key things from me.
You know the gist of the story.
Yeah.
And the concept, and you know the title.
Yeah, I do know the title.
But you don't know how it all plays.
No, because I haven't heard the whole thing in its entirety.
Right.
Which, you know, if it has a narrative arc, I don't know what that narrative arc is.
Right, that's good. Right. Yeah. I have started... recently, I'm now starting to drop tidbits, clues, teasers on on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, anywhere I have an online presence. And if you see anything that is kind of confusing or cryptic or mysterious that is marked with the hashtag SP,
that is a
clue for the record. I need you to know, though, because I dropped one today and everybody got all fancy pants and thought they figured it out. You need to know that there is I don't want to say that it's deceptive, but there may be some red herrings being thrown out.
Oh,
there too. But the red herrings are actually still relevant to the, I can't, this will all make sense one day. Maybe one day, maybe like a few months from now, we'll go back and we'll play some of these segments and I'll decode all of it, what I'm not actually talking about now. But the record is hashtag SP at this point.
Right. Well, I'm really excited. Because I know you've been working so very hard for so long, and I'm just really excited for this to finally just get out into the world.
It feels nice because I've been working on it for so long, and I've sort of sighed heavily the many times when you ask me about the progress of it on this podcast. Yes. It's nice that I'm at a point where I'm starting to feel like this thing is really kind of materializing. It's gelling. Yeah. A lot of the work is getting done, and now I actually. It used to be a little bit more abstract, but now I can see this whole project and I can kind of...
Well, yeah, no, sure, though. The whole thing is taking shape. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's more than just an idea at this point. There's, like, tangible material and a lot more work than just creating music is now, like, in the final stages of being complete as well. Because I know you're having a poster image designed as well.
Poster image.
And that's going to be on, like, t-shirts and... And you know, possibly other merch as well. I don't want to tip that either. But
right, there's going to be a whole merchandising campaign that's connected just with imagery from the record.
Right.
If in a dream world, if I had the possibility, I would make the record scratch and sniff.
can you tell us what scent it would be?
Lavender. This record smells like lavender.
Hashtag SP. Hashtag right there. SP. There you go. Done. A little viral marketing on a podcast. That's pretty cool.
That'll make sense someday.
Well, I'm really excited. I've been seeing little, like, very obscure bits and pieces.
Sure, yeah. You're one of two people.
Yeah.
Three people. You're one of three people that gets to see anything from it.
Right, or hear anything from it.
Right, and you have probably been exposed to the most of it.
And even from my point of view, it's still very obscure and still very, like... I have no idea how the whole thing is going to come together.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really excited.
Well, thanks. I'm very excited too. It'll be great to have this thing done because then again, I can, well, right now it's a really solid excuse for not being social.
Right.
But I feel like that once this is finished, then I will maybe go out and do things again, or at the very least finish the video games that are backing up. So that's what I've been doing. Now,
awesome.
I originally, like, when I used to co-produce Epic Win Burlesque with you.
You stepped down.
I stepped down. And when I stepped down, it was kind of, and this was last year.
Yeah.
But I stepped down because I needed to put more time into working on my art and making songs and working on a new record and producing Epic Win. Just required a lot of attention, a lot of energy that I needed more time to do that. So now that I've had this like year to do that, now I see you finding yourself in a kind of a similar position. Where you have had this experience where maybe you had an epiphany while in the hospital.
Yeah.
But you realized you've put all of this energy and everything that you had into running Epic Win Burlesque and keeping it going, that your own craft, which is magic, had been sorely neglected. So let's talk about that. What has happened? What has changed for you? What are you doing?
It was exactly that. You mentioned it. In the time that I spent in the hospital, in the 4 months of hospital that I had to endure, it forced me to really live my life presently. Whereas I was always living my life 3 months ahead. And in those 3 months, it was always Epic Win shows or something having to do with New York City Burlesque. And I love performing in New York City Burlesque. I love Epic Win Burlesque. But somewhere along the line, I forgot that I was a professional magician, which is weird because I was performing magic in all of these shows.
Right.
But I I'm a, you know, in much the same way that there are, you know, long form comedians or long form improv artists, you know, I'm a long form magician. I'm a stage magician. And I've been focusing on just doing chunks for so long, I had forgotten what it's like to do a whole show. And which is what I was doing prior to burlesque, essentially. Mm-hmm. And
like just an evening with Nelson Lugo.
Yeah, exactly. And I wasn't doing that, and I wasn't doing that for so long. I mean, a large part of that was my divorce and my marriage is kind of dissolving, and I was still reeling from that for a very long time.
Sure.
And so I was not only not creating anything, but I had no desire to create anything. And then Epic Wind came along, and that became something I could put all of my focus and attention to. And then cancer came along and kind of slapped me in the back of the head and said, maybe you should be creating opportunities for yourself rather than other people, you know? Mm-hmm. And again, don't get me wrong. I love Epic Wind Burlesque, and Epic Wind Burlesque is still going to be something that happens. I just think it's more important in the long run for me to focus on my craft and my craft only. And you're right. I've been sort of re-inspired. I have my passion for it back again. And
are you working on new stuff?
Yeah. I've created, well, in the past year, I've created at least three new acts, which is three more acts that I created in the past 4 years.
Right.
And you know,
sure.
And I'm creating new acts all the time. I don't get to, you know, they don't get to go on stage as quickly as I'd like because I have to rehearse them. They have to be perfect before I can put them on stage.
Sure.
And magic is fucking hard, yo.
It doesn't look easy.
No, it's not. I mean, it's only good if it looks effortless. And yeah. So that's what I'm working towards right now. And in the midst of all of that, I am now writing my own one-man show.
That's right. Let's talk about that one-man show. You have Nelson Lugo is developing a one-man show, a magic show in five acts.
Yes, yes.
And what's the title of this show?
I don't know. I don't know if I should tip. No, I'll tip it. I mean, it's fine. I mean, this is the first.
By the time.
Well, no, this will be the first time that it gets revealed anywhere. And I won't say anything online until this actually airs.
Okay.
But it's called Gathering the Magic.
Yes. Gathering the Magic.
Gathering the Magic.
It's very funny.
A magic show in five acts. Written and performed by Nelson Lugo.
And it's just a one-man show. It's just you on stage.
It's just me on stage, yes.
Unless you use maybe like an audience
Well, I mean, they'll be volunteers.
But it's just your show.
Yes, I'm not sharing the stage with another entertainer, yes. And which is, it feels good. It feels like I'm coming home to something. It feels like, in many ways, like this is something I should have been doing all along. And I'm kind of kicking myself that it took me this long to realize it.
Oh, that's wasted energy.
Well, I mean, I'm not
glad that you're doing it now.
Well, I'm not dwelling on it because I'm too busy creating stuff.
Well, good.
But as of right now, the show phase one is complete. The show is the writing of it is done, or at least the first draft of it is done. Mm-hmm. And right now, I am interviewing directors to direct. Basically, it's storytelling with magic. It's not an evening where it's just magic trick, because I find that to be boring.
Sure.
And coming from a very strong actor's background, I need a sense of theater in what I do.
Sure.
And so
you're a showman.
Yeah, exactly. And so these are going to be. I guess my hook is that. You know, the stories are true, but the magic is fake, basically. You know, these are stories that are about my life, about my childhood, about, you know, basically a lot of the decisions and the actions that I took and the people that I knew who were directly responsible or indirectly responsible for Nelson Lugo being a magician in the first place, essentially. Yeah.
Does it get weepy? Does it get a little tear jerky?
You know what? A little bit, but it's there is this one story where I talk about my grandmother.
Right, and you can't talk about your grandmother, or at least you can't write about your grandmother.
Well, no, it's both. I can't write. I learned in a very interesting way that I cannot write or talk about my grandmother without crying a little bit.
Let's talk about your grandmother.
You're not going to get me to cry on the podcast.
I'm the Barbara Walters of this podcast now.
My grandmother was a very, very important person in my life. She passed away 3 years ago. And just a little hint of the story, she practiced santeras, which means that she was a santeria, which means she was a Puerto Rican witch. And that's, that is
black magic.
Yeah, that's black magic. And she believed what she did was real. I didn't believe what she did was real. And we loved each other immensely. And I miss her quite a bit. I miss her more now that I'm writing about it. And a lot of the show kind of leads up to her story in my life. And, you know, it just... It's very, I don't believe in coincidences, but if I did, I would link her love of her magic to my love of my magic and have that be some kind of like connection.
Wait. You don't believe in coincidences or you don't believe in fate?
Both. I think it's a coincidence.
A coincidence doesn't require your belief. A coincidence is a fact.
No, you know what? You're right. You're absolutely sorry.
Fate. Coincidence is the realist's version to explain a fate.
I do not believe in fate. I do not believe that things happen for a reason.
There you go.
I don't believe that there's any kind of premeditated or predetermined
I got your back on that.
Methods about life.
Sure.
You know, it's all one big random soup of randomness.
There is no destiny.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Exactly. And so, but the way I tell the story, one would be led to believe that I was always destined to be a magician based on my background of this long line of conjurers in my family. Because it was my grandmother and then her grandmother and her grandmother and her grandmother before that, basically. And so I'm the only one in the family who, quote unquote, practices magic. So
interesting.
If you believe in that sort of thing, you would draw those kind of conclusions, but sure. I don't. And I say so in my show, basically. And I let the audience kind of decide for themselves what they want to believe. Because I make it perfectly clear about what I believe, which doesn't take away from the fact that I love my grandmother so very much. I'm really, really excited. I like phase one of this whole thing is complete in my mind.
You need a director.
I need a director. I need a director / dramaturge, you know, someone who can collaborate with me and, you know, polish these stories, hone them, you know, get them to a point where it's, you know, sharper and sure. You know, clearer, and you know, I'm actually saying what I want to convey rather than the ramblings of my brain on paper, basically. I'm pretty excited.
Wow, that's very exciting. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, and it's all new magic.
All of
it. There's nothing in this show that I've done for the past 4 years.
Wow.
Essentially.
Damn.
Yeah.
I'm even more excited now.
Well, no.
I figured there'd be a couple things in there that
that's not true. My Silk to Egg routine.
Love it.
Is in it. And that's actually the only reason why it's in it is because you keep telling me how much you fucking love it.
Oh, it's my favorite. That's my favorite act of yours.
So that is the only piece of magic that's in it that's from prior to this show. Which is why, you know, in Florida was such a productive time for me because I managed to convince a venue director to book my show sight unseen.
How did that happen? Were you doing hosting a burlesque show at that?
No, not at all. I went to, while I was down in Florida, I saw a bunch of shows. And one of the shows I saw was at a venue called The Venue.
Clever.
Clever title. And a beautiful space. Beautiful space. I was so heartened to see such a beautiful space in Orlando. Brand new facility, great stage, great lights, the whole thing. And there's a woman named Blue Star.
I know her.
Yeah. And she runs a burlesque show there. She also has a dance troupe. And she,
now I know the venue too. I've been there.
Yeah,
I've seen a show there.
Yeah, exactly. And so she owns a venue. She runs the burlesque show. She runs her dance troupe. Like, she is a woman of many hats and many talents.
Sure.
And I saw her dance piece there called Hammers and Lambs, or Lambs and Hammers. I forget which. And it was beautiful. It's modern dance, so a lot of it goes over my head because I'm just not informed about it.
Sure.
But it was very beautiful, and I was very entertained. And after the show, a friend of mine, Sean, our mutual friend, mm-hmm. Sean, he's the one who took me, and he knows her. And so I got an introduction, and we started talking. They're like, oh, what do you do, Nelson? Well, you know, I'm here from New York. I'm hosting this show. I'm a magician. You're a magician? That's awesome. Really? Well, I have a one-man show, and I'm looking for a venue. Hey, would you like to do it in October? Sure.
Now you have a deadline to create, to finish creating the show.
Right.
At that point, you still weren't done with it, I'm assuming.
Oh, no, no, not at all. So I had
put the fire under you, so.
Well, I had originally planned, and I may still, this may, it may still be my original plan. I gave myself a deadline of January to get it on stage in New York, which mm-hmm. may actually still happen. Getting a deadline in October, whew, man, that put the... all kinds of fear in me, and I finished that writing that show lickety split.
Good.
So the show, for as far as I know, is done writing. The director or dramaturg may feel differently, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm done writing it.
Sure.
So now I'm rehearsing the magic and workshopping it in other shows and stuff, and just to get like audience reaction, because yeah, I'm not going to know if it's going to work or not unless I get in front of an audience. And there's one trick that I do that it's almost impossible for me to rehearse it without an audience. So that was nerve-wracking to do it like that new in front of an audience and still have it be spectacular, basically. But so far, everything's working.
Oh,
and
great.
I'm having a great time, rehearsing this stuff and coming up with new magic and having a good time. And
I, for one, am incredibly excited to see it because I also... Like, I don't like admitting this.
I know what you're going to say.
I'm a fan of your work.
That is not the first time you have said that to me.
I know.
In that exact phrasing and exact words.
I know. Even the same body gestures.
Yeah,
too.
Same body
I really,
shrugs.
I love seeing you do magic because you're great at it and because... It's just something that like I can't even fathom doing.
Right.
And so every time when you do one of these burlesque shows and you do a magic trick in it, it's always exciting to see you do one. But I'm excited to see you do a whole show.
Yeah, me too. I want to get back to doing what I love, and that's what I love doing.
And that's exciting. Yeah. It'll be especially exciting because it'll be like, oh, you aren't just excited because you can execute this one trick.
Right.
It's a whole passion project. It's your whole show.
Yeah,
and I'm really excited.
And it's interesting because I originally wrote this show to be all of the stories were going to be very raw and very vulnerable and a bit darker.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had come, and maybe we'll talk about this one day, but not today. But you know, I had come from out of a very dark place in my life, mm-hmm. and so all of that's kind of still fresh in my mind, and it's stuff that I don't talk about. In public,
sure.
you know, because you were around for it.
Sure.
But you know, there's parts of that time that I don't talk about and have never talked about, and I feel a need to talk about it now. And I purposely left it out because I started writing these stories, and these stories are they're fun, they're adorable, they're still real and they're still funny. But there isn't really an edge to them because I don't write that way. And to stick some of the sadder stuff in seemed inappropriate for now. So there will come a time where I actually write a sadder or darker show that has magic in it. But this is not the time.
How long is this whole show in running time? What is your ideal?
My plan is an hour. Right now, I have a solid 45 minutes, which I think is a good length for a magic show. I think anything over an hour, and that's too much.
Yeah.
So I have 45 minutes of material with maybe like 10 minutes of interaction with the audience. So I think ultimately it's going to be like a 50-minute show.
Okay.
Essentially, when it's all said and done. There are five stories and I believe seven pieces of magic in it. And the magic is... The stories do not punctuate the magic, and the magic don't illustrate the stories. At least not obviously. They do to me, but I'm never going to reveal that to the audience. You know, if you're smart enough to pick up on the clues...
Oh, I'm going to pay attention.
...then all the power to you. But this show, first and foremost, is written to be entertaining. And it's written for the most common denominator. It, you know, I'm writing this as a very commercial, very pleasing.
You want to be able to play to a range of audiences.
Absolutely. Because my plan is to tour. My plan is to get booked on, like, you know, like a club circuit or a venue circuit or some kind of like college tour or maybe even cruise ships. You know what I mean? And I really need this show to be have as broad an appeal as possible. Luckily for me, it's turning out that way. Like, I don't need to do it on purpose. It just is what it is. And so, you know, if I'm going to hit the next level in my career as a magician, this is something that needs to happen. You know, I don't have a choice in the matter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's either that or play New York Burlesque shows for the next 20 years, which is fine. I've made a living doing that.
Is it fine?
It is. Well, it is. I mean, burlesque has been very good to me.
Sure.
I'm really not saying
you don't have to dismiss how good burlesque has been to you, but really just working in burlesque shows for the next 20 years, I don't think it would actually be fine for you.
You know what? If it wasn't for the cancer, I probably would be doing that. And I would be okay with that because I made a good living. I had a good life, or rather I have a good life in it. You know, I'm regarded. I'm well regarded, you know, because of the cancer, I need more.
Yeah.
And this is the next step for that, essentially. And so I'm going to get it filmed professionally. I'm going to get it filmed in high definition. I'm going to then use that footage because in order to get a booking agent, they need, you know, 45 minutes of uninterrupted footage of your show or act. And so this is going to be the show that's going to propel me to the next level, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and getting booked in Florida is not bad. You know,
yeah,
that's a damn good step, you know, and
it's a showbiz culture.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Theme park, you know, showbiz culture.
So, yeah, I would love nothing more than to travel to, you know, great cities all across this country and do the show, you know, maybe even take it to Edinburgh, you know, and have that, you know, have that feather in my cap, you know.
I'm sure our legions of fans of the podcast in their various cities
all around the globe, 13 of them, I think we determined at this point,
they would probably love to see it too.
I hope so. I really do.
I do think it's interesting that we both decided to really, like, not only just throw ourselves into our art again, but to throw ourselves into our art and both ended up creating something that is very personal and very real and dark and narrative, but still consumable to an audience. Like, we've both kind of gone a very similar route with that.
I think, you know what, I'm not surprised by that.
You know what would be awesome?
What's that?
Is then if someday, like when this record's done, like I'm going to do, like when I do an album release, I'm not going to do it in a music venue like I have with previous records. I'm going to do it in a theater and I'm going to like do the whole album beginning to end and I'm going to get all the guests to show up and appear on the songs and the voice actor to show up and we're going to like actually stage out this, act out this whole story of the thing.
I'm so happy you're talking about this because I wanted to ask you about this and I didn't know if this was part of the secret stuff. I am beyond thrilled and excited that you're actually going to not just have a concert for your album, but you're going to have a staged theatrical experience.
Oh yeah, I'm going to have to do a similar thing. I have to get a director.
Yeah,
there's going to be lighting cues.
I am so fucking happy.
I'm doing this album like a play.
Yeah,
basically when I do it live, it's my Tommy. Or the Wall or whatever. It's just a shittier Tommy or Wall.
Oh,
but it's still,
stop.
Look, the Wall.
No, it's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I like the idea that there's a possibility in our future
that I can open for Shape of the Dark Lord.
Or vice versa. That we can do a show together that isn't a burlesque show.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, also, I mean, there's also a part of the burlesque business that I was never really comfortable with. Like, I am a straight male who produces an entertainment that relies on the talent of women. Like, I have never felt that I've exploited anyone. Quite the opposite, actually.
But it still feels kind of icky.
It feels a little icky. Like,
yeah, I went through that exact same thing.
As a feminist, there's a part of it. Not a huge part of it, because obviously I've did it for 4 years, but there is a part of it in the back of my mind that's like, dude, you're straight male. Like, this should be a completely female-run industry.
It is my belief that burlesque shows should be produced by burlesque performers and hosted by burlesque performers.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for people like us.
Right.
Like, I know people enjoy seeing us. Yeah. And it's, I mean, hosting isn't exactly easy.
No,
it's
no.
not brain science, but it's not exactly easy.
Well,
either.
I mean,
there are plenty of burlesque performers yeah. out there who produce their own shows and they do a great job.
Yeah.
And they host their own shows
yeah.
and do a great job. There's no reason that like a fully clothed straight dude needs to come in and be like, I'm the your ringleader
yeah.
when all of these people are doing all of the amazing work. And I feel
absolutely, absolutely. In fact, it has always bothered me that I have never done a burlesque act.
Yeah.
I will never do a burlesque act because I'm just, my talents lie elsewhere.
Right.
And it's just not something I'm interested in.
Right.
But I'm very cognizant of the fact that I am someone involved in burlesque for the past 9 years who's never taken their clothes off.
Right.
And that weighs on me, you know?
Yeah,
I feel
the exact same way.
And so, I mean, I'm still going to produce burlesque. I mean, Epic One's not going anywhere. It'll probably be scaled back considerably considering that I'm moving in a new direction in my life. But, you know, Epic Win was a very, very important in my life. It'll continue to be a very important one in my life. And, you know, it's just that I need to make room for other things, basically.
Well put.
Yeah.
And best of luck to you.
And best of luck to you too. I am excited
Thanks.
To buy your album. I'm excited.
What do you mean buy my album?
I always buy the first one.
You're not going to buy this one.
I buy the first one.
I'm not taking your money.
I buy it on iTunes.
Oh, you're such a dick. You didn't.
You have gotten my money via iTunes. Wow. I'm very excited to own this because this is something that's been... You've been working on for a long time.
It's been a few years.
You know? But you've only been working on it in earnest for the past year.
Yeah, that's true.
So
it's only really had direction in like the past year.
Right.
Before that, I was just dicking around and periodically writing songs about ghosts. Now it has direction.
But yeah, I would love to do a double bill with you.
Well, talk to my agent.
You don't have an agent.
Well,
can I be your agent?
You're hired.
Hey, Schaefer, I have this great idea. There's this kid named...
I'm full of pills. I can't talk. That was me snoring because I'm on the nod from all the pills.
So good stuff is on the horizon for
yep.
both Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Yep.
And
Nelson Lugo.
And Magician Nelson Lugo.
Yep.
And if you're in Florida in late October, I'm going to be doing my one-man show, Gathering the Magic, for two nights at the venue. And, you know, all of that Facebook stuff is going to go up pretty damn soon.
Sure.
You know.
If you're anywhere on planet Earth in September, you can get my new record. Hashtag SP until the title's revealed.
Right. And then probably in a city near you shortly after that, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. I'll do some traveling when the record comes out.
Nice. Dude, take me with you.
Okay.
If you're gonna do your thing in theaters versus concert venues, then
no, I'm gonna do it in theater for the sake of a record release party in New York. But when I travel, I'm still gonna play in music venues.
Okay.
And I'm not taking all of the guests and the voice actor with me.
Oh. Can you tip some of the guests on the album, or do you want to keep that a secret?
Oh, I gotta keep that a secret too.
Damn it!
Sorry, so many secrets, you guys.
Damn it! Here's the interesting thing. I'm ostensibly the one with all the secrets, technically, being a magician and all.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you every damn thing about
this. Oh, I know.
Everything you want to know.
I know. But I don't want to know.
I think that's it. I mean, I don't have anything else to talk about.
I think we're good. You got to plug anything?
Yes. August 3rd, Saturday, August 3rd, Epic Win Burlesque is going to be at our bar at 8 p.m. And the theme, the concept, the overall production of the show is 90s boy bands.
Yep.
It's going to be a mix of ladies and dudes shaking and twisting, shimmying and shaking to 90s boy band music.
So many headset microphones.
And you know what? It's going to be hilarious. There's a new kid on the block. See what I did there? There is a new kid on the block. His name is Lucky Charming. And he is actually going to be hosting the show. It's going to be his first hosting opportunity, and I'm really, really excited to give him the stage space. He's young and hungry and eager and excited, and I can't wait to see him work. So come out if you are in New York City for that.
On Saturday, August 10th, Epic Win Burlesque presents the Serenity Spectacular at the Bell House in Brooklyn, New York. It is a show that is a tribute
to
Joss Whedon's Firefly.
There you go.
There'll be something like a dozen acts. All the characters you want to see from Firefly, and also Badger.
Oh yeah.
There'll be some steampunk go-go dancers in the front bar, and then closing out the end of the night will be full-on hip-hop sets from both me and Adam Warrock.
Yeah, yeah.
The vocalist behind the Brown Coats
mixtape.
I love
me some Adam Warrock.
Yeah, me too.
I have a man crush on him, like serious man crush.
Get in line.
You know what? I actually have a lot of shows in August, as it turns out. Yeah. I'm not going to list them all here. If you want to know all of my shows, then just follow me on Facebook. It's the Vaudevillian Facebook, or just search my name, Nelson Lugo. Or you can go, I have a fan page as well that you can like that has all that information as well. Or you can go to the newly designed NelsonLugo.com. I've refreshed all of everything. I've cleaned up the site. I've dusted it and taken the cobwebs down. And it is now a viable place for all things Nelson Lugo.
Nice. I'm going to follow your lead, you know, because I've got a couple of hosting gigs in August. And F that. Go to my website. You'll get the dates when I'm performing. And that's SchaeferTheDarkLord.com. Oh, and before that, I'm traveling back to rural Iowa for my high school reunion.
That's right. You're going for your high school. Is this your
20-year high school reunion?
Damn, son. Good luck with that.
Christ be with me.
Oh, no. That's not a thing.
Oh, no. May some sort of Zen-like peace wash over me as I travel back to a place where I was called a faggot for 18 years.
Yikes.
Yeah.
I want to hear all about I want to go with you. That's what I really want to do.
Oh, God. I'm so glad.
I want to go with you.
I'm so glad nobody from New York is going with
me. And record the whole thing. Like, just like as a documentarian, just like record everything around you.
Well, I'll bring back lots of goodies. I'm going to try to get some like audio samples and some photos and videos of events going on.
Nice.
I'm going to have a whole lot of surreal nostalgia.
But the most important thing in August is the Epic Podcast 1 year anniversary.
Dun, 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 dun. Can you believe it's been a year?
Yes.
Next month we will.
Next month we'll be 1 year old. And not just that, but we are going to have a very, very special Epic Podcast.
What do you mean special?
Special. It's not just going to be us and these beautiful and spacious Studio 6C. Oh, no, 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 no.
What?
No. We're going to be recording this show live in front of a studio audience.
Studio audience?
Yes, we are going to be taking the Epic Podcast to the Tank Theater on August 16th. And we are going to be doing it live in front of an audience. We're going to have all kinds of amazing guests. We're going to have musical guests. We're going to have all kinds of shenanigans. It's going to be recorded for audio, obviously, for the podcast. But I am in talks with the Nerdist Show to have it streaming live on the internet.
Oh, goodness.
Yes. So Friday, August 16th.
Friday, August 16th.
The tickets are going to be cheap as fuck.
Because it's really going to be the two of us talking shit about Batman.
And with some very, very special guests.
We will have some special guests. Maybe some alumni from the podcast.
Definitely.
Maybe
some
we'll
alumni from the podcast.
Bring back some of our
podcast
guests and have them do their thing on stage.
In fact, we are going to be bringing back some audience favorites. And our musical guest. Can we talk about our musical guest?
We can talk about our musical guest.
We are asking Afterbirth Monkey
from episode 11?
Yes, they are going to be our musical guest for the evening.
Good,
and they're gonna
they
play
have more than three songs.
No, they have some amazing, funny songs, and they're going to be playing some songs for us live. It's going to be a much longer podcast, obviously, so we'll probably end up delivering it in two chunks. But we will make that determination as we get closer. But I am really excited.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun.
So if you want to know more about that, then watch the interwebs, watch Nelson Lugo. .com, watch SchaeferTheDarkLord.com, watch our perspective Twitters and Facebook feeds for all the information, because I am so damn excited. We're gonna have prizes for the audience.
Are we?
Yeah. Maybe even a trivia contest. Who knows?
Oh my gosh, there's so much.
I know.
Yeah, watch it. We'll ask trivia questions about the history of this show, and then the room will fall silent. Because nobody that we lure to the show in New York actually listens to.
No. Nobody in New York actually
Afterbirth Monkey listens, but they're going to be performing. Well, so no. Really
they only started listening after they became guests of the show.
Okay, fair enough.
August is going to be a fantastic month for the two of us and for Epic Win and for the podcast. So, as always, if you have questions, comments, love letters, or porn, send it to epicpiecast@gmail.com.
That's epicpiecast@gmail.com.
This has been the Epic Podcast, episode 12. This is Nelson Lugo.
And this is Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Be safe, internets.
Bye.
The Epic Podcast is brought to you by Nerdy Show. All programming on the Nerdy Show Network is listener supported. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, you can show your support by telling a friend or going to nerdyshow.com and clicking the support button. Even a small contribution gets you cool nerdy perks and allows you to take part in our monthly support drive contests. For more episodes of the Epic Podcasts, videos, contests, and other nerdy programming, visit nerdyshow.com. Subscribe to all our latest episodes via the iTunes Store. And remember to follow us on Facebook, Tumblr, and Twitter @Nerdy Show to keep up to date on the latest Nerdy Show news.